So, welcome to X-Professional podcast. This is an ongoing series of discussions about explosion protection, how explosion protection affecting our world, of the commercial world, not only the industrial world. And today, I do have a very prominent guest from the world of explosion protection, Professor Dr. Thorsten Arnold from Germany, who is one of my favorite, let me say, professionals from this world. I know you, Thorsten, from the ancient times, from the early 90s, I can say. So we have spent a few days, few times together. So welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Ancient times is good. This is also a good hint about our age. We are no longer such young guys as
we are getting old, but we are getting more and more smart. Yeah, we can say.
Yeah.
Right. Really appreciate your time, and let me say there is a very actual point of our discussion. You recently published your book about non-electrical explosion protection. So first of all, my great and warm appreciation to the subject, because I do believe that's a very important subject. But please tell me a few words about the book. What has led you to write the book? And I know you have partners as well.
So I think the idea for this book was born during a discussion with our partner for a long time, the University of Jena, of Applied Science in Jena, and the working group of Professor Engelmann. And he, as a professor for design and construction and machine building, and since a long time, he is specialized on explosion protection. And, in the past, we had a lot of regulations and standards about electrical explosion protection, so explosion protection for electrical devices. I think it is a better term. And electrical devices, electrical equipment is in a very defined and closed space. So it is quite easy to develop standards for the safety concept of such distinguished products. But on the other hand, we all know that if we look at machinery and apertures, the electrical part of this equipment is only the half of the story. And there's a possibility to have a lot of other ignition sources on such equipment. Mechanical sparks, for instance, electrostatic discharges on big plastic covers, and hot surfaces and so on, and which has nothing to do with electrical energy. This is just out of the function of the product. And this was a blind spot in the regulation until the first edition of the ATEX was published in 2003. And then step by step, we had the development of European standards under the 14.6. I forgot the name, it was something with 14, a long time ago.
Sure.
And this new system, this new regulation was very welcomed by the public, by the machine builders, and also by the regulators. And then the things developed step by step, and now we have a much better situation. We have an international standard, an IEC standard, ISO standard, a combined standard, the 80079, part 36, 47. And, but it is still quite a new kind of business and not so easy to handle like the electrical equipment. Since machine building apparatus has a very big variety and a lot of different function elements and combination of these function elements, it's not so easy to standardize. And that's why the basic of this new safety concept for non-electrical equipment is more risk-based approach. And this is also not easy to understand. And this was our intention, that we said, okay, let's help our partners, our customers in the machine building industry, and give some hints from our work, from our daily work. So of course we did a lot of such ignition source analysis and risk analysis for machines. There is a lot of experience and competence, and this we wanted to collect and to make it available to the public. And on the other hand, we looked also at the general market of textbooks, specialist books for explosion protection, and we found out that we have two big parts of these books. One part is the highly sophisticated scientific kind of books, which is not so easy to read by practical people in the industry. And on the other hand, we have other books which are more or less dealing with ATEX and directives and so on, but there is no description of the technical details and of the technical circumstances. And that's why we, and then the other thing is that these books are normally quite old, so they needed an update. And there was no indications that there will be an update for these books. And that's why we decided, okay, let's make our book focused on this special field of non-electrical explosion protection, but also put a very big chapter inside with a generic description, mainly of the technical issues and on the physical chemical issues, a little bit about the standards and directives, and try to update this topic in a very practical manner. This was the intention. So the authors are Professor Engelmann from the Jena University, Ms. Dr. Herbst, a member of his group, a colleague from our company, a former general manager of our company, Clive Hermanowski, and myself.
I do believe that's a very valuable asset for the industry. I'm very eager to read. Do you believe, you already mentioned, non-electrical explosion protection is not a well-discussed subject, okay? Because I've been, like I said before, in the early 90s, a newbie to the subject, and I've been told by old engineers that explosion protection is a subject for electrical engineers, okay? Because it's a spark, doesn't matter where it comes from, it's a spark, so it's an electrical topic. And in that way, it shall be handled. And I fully agree, there's a great difference between the two, electrical and non-electrical, because non-electrical is strictly depending on the operation, on the maintenance, on the conditions, the design stage of the topic. So it shall be a very interesting subject. Did you have any support from machine builders for the same, or is it more let me say out of experience book?
It is a combination of both. You know, we didn't have any direct support from machine builders, but as I said before, in the working group of Professor Engelmann, they did a lot of projects with machine builders in the past. And the experiences they could gather from these work is also a very important input on our book. And the same I can say about my part of the book. You know, a lot of the information I use for the chapters I was writing came from my ongoing contacts to colleagues and to customers. So it's
I understand. Let me ask another question, another topic, because I do believe that's strongly connected to non-electrical, H2. hydrogen, because that's like a new trend. And we are both part of, you are leading the working group, the Dash 19 under ICEX, which is strictly in charge for hydrogen. And I can remember at the time of setting up this working group, I was asking a very direct question to the attendees, why we are dealing with this topic, because that's an ancient topic, okay? Hydrogen was always with us. It's always been part of the industry, okay? Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the conditions, the parameters, how to deal with. So why is H2 has become, okay, from the energetic point of the topic, of the subject, I understand, okay? But in terms of explosion protection, why we have to reformat or recondition the whole monologue regarding hydrogen? And what has, does it have any consequence to the electrical and non-electrical explosion protection that we are newly speaking about hydrogen?
Yeah, these are two questions.
Yeah, I know.
to answer the first, I have to dig a little bit deeper. You know, you are absolutely right. So we have very positive experience with the handling of hydrogen in the industry. We can say since centuries. Sure. You know, Haber-Bosch synthetic was developed in 1906. You know, and this is one of the major applications of hydrogen to produce fertilizers. And by the way, it was also a very important step to reduce the hunger on Earth significantly, which is quite often forgotten. You know that at the time being we have our peace and process protests in Germany, and that's why I'm a little bit emotional with this subject. But back to the topic and to the question. You know, we have a good experience of a lot of very well-developed concepts, and it is safe what we do with hydrogen in the industry. But, you know, if you look at the, and it, let's say it's industrial old applications, first we have small-sized and middle-sized process facilities for the hydrogen inside of the chemical plants. We have quite short transport distances. So, and the transport is mainly done by pipelines. And the next consequence is that we have closed areas surrounded by high fence and safeguards. So the public access is almost impossible. And inside of these facilities, of these plants, we have well-experienced and competent technical management and staff, and they have the right safety awareness regarding hydrogen. And on the other hand, we have also to say that we have mostly constant process inputs like energy and material and so on. They are constant running processes. The maintenance and inspection is very well regulated, let's say in most of the chemical plants, and we don't need a huge storage capacity for the hydrogen. And on the other hand, if we look at the new applications, we need huge amounts of hydrogen. You know, we are, you know, if we want to flatten the curve of the volatile renewable energies in our countries, we need huge amounts of hydrogen. And that means, and then everybody is preferring the green hydrogen. So that means we need a huge capacity for electrolyzers. But even if we use blue hydrogen, we need huge facilities for the carbon capture and so on. And we are in the process of scaling up from megawatt to gigawatt, if we look at the electrolysis capacity. And that means that huge amounts of hydrogen must be handled safely. Then we decentralize the hydrogen infrastructure. So we are no longer focused on small areas like process plants. We go in the touch with the public. If you look at fueling stations or distribution centers, or if we look at the fuel cell applications in the buildings and so on. And if you look at the cars, at the vehicles, which are also driven in the future by hydrogen, or trains or aircrafts and so on. So that means we have a decentralized structure with a lot of touch points with laymen, which are not experienced and not competent, and who had no awareness of the safety issues with hydrogen. Then we have bigger need for long distance transports. So, and to do this in an economical way, so we have to increase energy density of the hydrogen. And this is can only be done either by compressed hydrogen to pressures up to 100 megapascal, which are 1000 bar, or to liquefy the hydrogen, and then we have to cool it down to minus 252 centigrades. And that means we have new hazards emerging, hazards of high pressure and hazards of chronic burning and other things like this. Yeah, then we have new transport means, liquid organic hydrogen carriers, LOHCs, or metal hydrides, which are also the source of new hazards. And what is also important and quite often overseen is that if we use hydrogen, hydrogen production and storage by electrolysis to flatten the volatility of the wind and of the photovoltaic, we have to deal with big dynamic problems, since normally these electrolyzers are not running and we are using the photovoltaic and the wind energy directly in our grids. And if we have too much, then we use the electrolyzers and then we have to store it. And the other time, these electrolyzers are not working. This is a very dynamic process, and this is not easy to handle. And if we look inside of the electrolyzers, this can also cause dangerous situations. And for this, we need answers, which are not given until now. Yeah, these are only some points. The other question was about the special properties, dangerous properties of hydrogen, if I remember.
I mean, not the properties. The properties are well known.
I
do believe an interesting factor here, and special thanks to your summary, because that was, I do believe, a very nice point of view. What is let me say the dynamic of all the applications for hydrogen, that we have new players on the ground. Okay, like a lot of people have been involved recently to these hydrogen issues who have no industrial experience. Okay, so for them, you need to make them learn about explosion protection. You have to use new wordings. And I do believe this is also the aim of the -19 working group as well.
Yeah.
Okay, to find this vocabulary, the common sense for the same.
That's right. We have a lot of new players on the ground. You know, if you look at the manufacturers of electrolyzers, only one example. You know, of course, we have the old and known and big ones like Siemens and Thyssen, Nucera, and so on. But we have also a lot of new ones, Nel, ASA, or Plug Power from the US.
From the US.
They have to become familiar with the regulations for hazardous areas. And I also think that sometimes there is not a very dedicated safety culture in these companies. They have to learn this. You know, if I take my company, Stahl, we are dealing with explosion protection since 100 years, you know. So our business, our history with explosion protected equipment started in the 20s of the last century after the big explosion at the BASF facility in Mannheim, Oppau. 100 years, this is a lot of time, and you know, we have the safety in the DNA, but these newcomers, they have to develop and establish such DNA in their company philosophy. And and on the other hand, I have sometimes the feeling, you know, I'm attending a lot of conferences, and I'm speaking there about the safety issues of hydrogen. And in a lot of these companies, I'm the only one who is speaking about that special issues. Everybody is speaking about the great opportunities, and there's a certain hype about hydrogen, which cooled down a little bit in the last month, but I'm sure that it will come back. But if I'm then talking about safety issues and speaking about the special properties of hydrogen, which must be looked at, and quite often feeling like a party crasher, you know. But it doesn't matter, you know. The facts are there, and we cannot change.
Someone has to mention. Someone has to mention. I do believe you used the nice wording party crasher, because I can remember myself. I've been into three countries' hydrogen policy. Writing, okay, that's official policy from the government, and I was given this edition to add the aspects of explosion protection, and I was pretty much surprised. I can tell you honestly, there was no word about the danger of explosion. It was just considered to be fire dangerous, okay, so it can burn, and that was the case, and certainly the great Hindenburg event was all the time announced as a nice example, and it was not an explosion, they said, which is true for this occasion, but this is nothing changes. I do believe all the subjects we are highlighting here strongly pointing on one very interesting topic. Who is the authority of explosion protection? Who is dealing with explosion protection? Because we have fire safety, we have work safety, okay? Let me say these are the main ones, but then they are really the authority for explosion protection, less I believe. What is your opinion about?
This is not a matter of my opinion. This is a matter of the country
I know.
You know, if you speak about the U.S., you can have the sheriff, local county sheriff, can be the authority having jurisdiction. This is the right term. I can only answer this question out of the German perspective, and here I would say the fire protection and the explosion protection are on the same level. So they are not quite the same philosophy. There's not quite the same philosophy behind these two aspects of safety, but they are, from the hierarchy, they are on the same level. And
Means that the chief, the fire chief, is in charge for controlling the explosion protection?
No. We have, I think, the responsible for both fire and explosion protection is located at the workplace safety. You know, we have the responsibility of the owner of a facility, and the owner of the facility is fixed in his duties by the law for workplace safety. And he has a responsibility to make the investigation of all hazards, including fire hazards and explosion hazards. and he is responsible for the establishment of mitigation measures, of appropriate mitigation measures about these two hazards, but also about all the other hazards, hazards of electrical energy, hazards of, poisoning of people and poisonous products and all these things. And it is in Germany we have a clear regulation about this. Out of my perspective, this makes also sense, since the persons who are working in an industrial plant or also in other facilities like a hotel or a restaurant or something like this, they want to protect from all dangers and hazards. And at the end of the day, if something happened and the people is killed, it doesn't matter for him or her and the relatives if this was caused by an explosion or a fire, or if the person dropped from a high position due to a lack of protection means,
That's an interesting topic, because I do agree with you, but on the other hand, I've been invited, just let me share you a recent experience. A few years back, from a management of a refinery, okay, that was not in Europe, and it was a very interesting discussion, and they said, okay, we had your presentation about explosion protection, okay, we understand our duty, but how can we bypass it? Okay, what happens if we don't deal with it? Okay, if we don't handle it? Okay, who will be in charge? Who has to pay? I said, okay, that's not my subject anymore. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not the chief from the police department, as you mentioned, in the US. So it has to be decided by the law of the recent country, okay, who is in charge for life and the value of assets, okay, investment, etc., etc. But that's just an interesting remark that from the management of a facility, this question, I mean, how to bypass may come. Yeah. Okay. If they are aware of the danger. Okay. So that's always, I do believe, a balancing topic, and they have to decide. So that's why I was pretty much into this with my question: is there any authority who is checking? Is there an insurance company? Might be.
It depends also on the substances you are handling and on the amount of these substances. Normally, I think inside of the European Union, we have our directives and regulations, and they are clearly stating that responsible for all these issues is the owner of a facility. He has a possibility to delegate this responsibility. It's clear if I'm the general manager of a facility with 10,000 employees, I cannot do this personally. So I must have the chance to delegate this, but the duty is that the selection process of the persons who are then responsible, which got this responsibility from the top management, the selection must be according to certain rules. Yeah, and it must be reasonable why I am selecting the person X for this job. And the other thing which is very important is that this selection and the delegation process is well documented. Yep. So if something happens and the attorney is coming to your company and I am not able to show the papers, I'm in a very bad position as a general manager. This is the first aspect. And the other aspect is, since Seveso, the big
Italy
fatality in Italy in the 70s or something like this, I don't remember exactly. So since this happened, a huge fertility and with a lot of death and death animals and so on, and a very poor chain of information, a very slowly and poor chain of information from the facility to the public around this facility. This was the reason for the development of the Seveso Directive. And the Seveso Directive is for, you know, bigger events. And here we, for instance, if we take the hydrogen, in this Seveso Directive, there's an appendix which is saying, if I have the production of more than 5 tons of hydrogen in my facility, I have to fulfill the next stage of the safety concept, which is defined in this directive. And if I have a production amount of 50 tons of hydrogen, I have to fulfill the requirements of the second stage. And inside of these stages, also the supervision by governmental authorities included. So on one hand, I have to prepare an annual safety report. I have to send my safety concept to the authorities, which has to endorse these safety concepts, and they are doing also a regular supervision of my safety concept. So I think this is a, I'm not such an expert in these things, but this is my understanding, and it's my, from my understanding, it's clearly and well regulated.
Yeah, you said it well, and let me address one very interesting topic, and that's regarding Seveso. The Seveso authorities recently started to check and audit the maintenance procedure within a facility, okay? So not just the conditions and the domino effect, you know, and all these stuff, but the maintenance procedures, okay? So the establishment according to the design stage, and I do believe that's a very interesting topic, and they more and more include, okay, the topic of explosion protection. This is what I see, okay? And yeah. What we experience due to our works, okay? And but you said you are coming from Germany, okay? I know in Germany there is one very interesting authority which is called, I can only tell the German word, Zugelassene Überwachungsstelle, okay? The TÜV. And I do TÜV. Believe this doesn't exist elsewhere, okay? It's just a German topic, okay? Can you just say a few words what a TÜV?
I think this instance of TÜV is caused by the existence of the TÜV. You know, the TÜV, the technical surveillance organization, TÜV Rheinland, TÜV Nord, TÜV Süd, TÜV Saarland, and so on, is a very old organization structure in Germany, which comes from the 19th century, and they have been responsible for the supervision of all these special machinery and equipment and facilities, like you know, if we have some pressurized storage vessels or other things, or elevators and so on. And they are also looking at the explosion protected equipment, and of course a lot of process companies are using the competence and the capacities of these organizations for the regular inspection and checks. You know, in Germany we have the regulations that the principal explosion protection concept has to be inspected, evaluated at the very beginning before a facility is started for the first time, and then after every 6 years. Mm-hmm. So, and you know, you have the option either to qualify own people, but they have to have a recognition from the authorities, or you have your own TÜV. Yeah. This is the case for the big players. BASF has its own SUS, and Merck in Darmstadt has also its own SUS. Or you are using the services of the TÜVs.
So it's a, it's not only an authority; it's all, it's also a service provider.
It's a service provider.
Interesting. But as far as I know, their duties are regulated as well. So for certain conditions, they are the only ones who can be in charge.
You know, we have, for instance, for the inspection of explosion protected equipment, we need also a special qualification. And for the people who are doing this, and if I don't want to develop such people out of my own staff, I can use the TÜV as a service provider.
Understood.
But you know, it's not possible to make, for instance, to make any repairs or modifications on explosion protected equipments, which has a certificate, an ATEX certificate, by people who are just having the skilled worker qualification. Yeah, you need a special recognition. Yeah.
This special recognition, if you're saying so, is also something new, I do believe, announced by the Dash 44, which is about personal competency. This is also a kind of new topic today, okay, because the standard has been recently published, okay.
Yeah.
I can tell you, yesterday at the Hungarian Chamber of Commerce, we just had the, let me say, the vote for the introduction as a Hungarian standard for the Dash 44, and it will happen soon, in few months.
Yeah.
So I do believe that's also something new, and not only addressing the usual topics like technician, supervisor, designer, but also the personnel, also in the authorities. So a lot of other, and my favorite subject within Dash 44 is the in-house competency topic, because I do believe that has been a very important and valuable topic for the same, and to discuss. So this will, I do believe, has a lot of let me say, interference with a bunch of industries. Okay.
Let me say two words about this standard, new standard. The first one is you have to consider this standard in close conjunction with IECX certification scheme for personal competency. You know, in the IECX POCC, we are working on the basis of the OD, Operational Document 504. And in this document 504, the certain units of competence are defined, but out of the perspective of a certification body. You know, what are we expecting from a candidate who wants to get such a certificate? And the idea was, coming from the other side, writing a standard which is giving a guideline about all the competencies I have to build up to prepare for such a certification, you know, and these both documents belong very close together. This is the first statement, and I think this is also interesting for all the persons who are, you know, it's not easy to build up a certain competence about such a technical discipline in such a niche market. Yeah? You know, it is very time consuming. And on the other hand, you have a very narrow scope of applications. You know, if you are doing all these efforts, you are convicted to stay in this business for your business life, you know. Otherwise, you are starting from the scratch in another job. You know, and that's why it's also very important for these guys to get an official endorsement, an official recognition of their capacities and competences. And that's why it's very important to have this personal competency scheme at IECX. Since then, you have you can show in the market what you are able to do, and this is very important for the persons. The other remark I want to make about this standard is, I was involved in this at the very beginning and at the end of this standard, and I must say, with the current status, I'm not quite happy. You know, since the inner structure is, for me, at the time being, not logical. You know, it's not so easy to understand. And that's why we decided to start with the second edition immediately. So we will have the next series of maintenance team meetings in March in Split in Croatia. And this working group 44 will start with preparation of the second edition. And in this second edition, we want to make it easier to understand and to follow the philosophy of this standard.
I do believe a very important message of the Dash 44, this is how I understood, okay, might be wrong, that it's not only my personal, but also an organizational structure is required.
Yeah.
Okay, because even if I'm competent, but I the one who I'm dealing with, okay, the organization or as part of or I'm servicing, okay, it's not
the boss of this organization.
Yeah.
The boss of this organization. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And their understanding is very important. You know, according to the ATEX regulation, the second one, we can say the operational one, there is a need for an EPD, explosion protection documentation. And part of this explosion protection, I do believe the most important part of, is the lecture to the management. Okay. Yeah. A half an hour, nothing more. Just to get their approval that this is an important topic, okay? And the Dash 44, I do believe, will help on this. And I do believe that that's a very important message. Thorsten, just one final question. As you said, you are long enough with all these subjects, and you have worked for your whole lifetime on this subject. How do you see the future of explosion protection? What is the next step, or where is it going? Everything is discussed, well organized, well handled, well treated. Sensitive topic.
Yeah. You know. I don't want to be too optimistic and too positive, but you know, since a couple of months, years, I'm also involved in the standardization of the hydrogen economy. So I'm a member of the TC197 of ISO dealing with the hydrogen technologies, and I'm the liaison officer between the IECX and this technical committee. And and if I compare the status, of course, hydrogen technology is a much broader and more complex area of business. But if I compare the status of the standardization work, I must say that we are in a very, very good position at the explosion protection. You know, and if I also compare what I found when I started in this business 31 years ago, this was a mess. You know, if we, for instance, if we wanted to introduce a new technology like the cage clamp terminals or the bi-pin lamp holders for the luminaires, it was a nightmare to get all these permission from all single European countries. And this was a big obstacle for all the technical process. And now we have the harmonization. And it's a, you know, I don't want to be too enthusiastic, but you know, we have really the status in the explosion protection that the main work is done in the IEC, in the maintenance teams, and then it's quite easy to go down to the European European standard over Senelec or SEN, and then into the national standards. It is a very smooth process, and this was initiated by, you know, the agreements of Vienna, Frankfurt, and Dresden. And in explosion protection, we realized this idea. So, and we are living this idea. we don't talk about the US. You know, the US is a special case. And when I started with my business, my colleagues, my older colleagues said, oh, yeah, if you are as old as we are in US, we will have also the IAC standards. But I don't think that this will happen in the next 100 years. But nevertheless, in the rest of the world, we have such a harmonization. But I have one critical point to mention, what I don't like. You know, if we come with a new addition or a new standard from the IEC to the European Union, and we want to transfer this new IEC standard into a harmonized standards under ATEX, we are depending on the so-called HAS consultant. This is an authority of the European community, which has a task to look at the fulfillment of the Appendix 2 of the ATEX directive. Yeah? And in the past, these HAS consultants have been experienced, quite often retired people from certification bodies or the industry of Europe. Since a couple of years, the HAS consultant is under the authority jurisdiction of Ernst & Young. You know, Ernst & Young is an American consultancy, you know, and they are responsible. They are selecting and they are controlling these HAS consultants. And, you know, for me as a European citizen, this is not very positive and acceptable. Why an American organization is dealing in such a very sensitive part of our European regulation. And this is what I don't like.
That's an interesting topic, because I knew about this HAS consultancy, and I've heard Ernst & Young, and certainly the question who they are dealing with. Okay, so who are they in the, and I let me say, for me, another annoying point, that we don't know who are behind. Okay, so it's just a secret board, they say, and no name, no one you can address, no one you can talk to, or people pretend to be part of.
Yeah.
So nobody knows, really. And so that's an interesting question. I fully agree what you've been saying, and I do believe the future of explosion protection, if you look at right now all the assets just around us, the table, the EV cars, the hydrogen, the glasses, okay, and the surface layer on the glasses, you know, sun protection, etc., they are all dealing with explosion protection, even including our morning cacao, okay? That's hazardous stuff. And in that way, exposure protection is part of each and every industry. Okay, so there is not any industry out of the EX industry. And the question, as you said, and as we agreed, whoever is in charge will recognize this danger as part of their responsibility. Okay, because that's their responsibility, that they recognize, and not only at the case or under the Seveso regulation, they deal with it, because that will be too late. Okay, we can agree on that, I believe. Okay, I really appreciate your time, and I really appreciate your sharing all your ideas and background information and experiences. And I'm looking forward, okay, we hope to have you back later on again, just for another session. And I wish you a pleasant day in Germany. I know it's kind of cold right now, it's very, very icy.
You know, it's winter. You must not forget, under all these discussions about climate catastrophe, we still have winter and summer.
I mean, that's changing, and that certainly has an influence on our industries as well, okay, and the compliance engineering of our industries as well, because all the weather conditions, thermal conditions, they change, and they have a very direct input onto your markets. So Torsten, really appreciate your time, and thanks for being with us. And let me say, this was a very interesting edition about explosion protection with Dr. Professor Torsten Arnold from Germany. And enjoy the day, keep up the good work, and hope to see you back again. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, it was a pleasure for me. Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.